Welcome to the Human Capital Lab podcast, where learning transforms work and lives. Hosted by Executive Director Rich Douglas, we explore how education and innovation create opportunities to drive impact in the field of talent development. Get ready. Today's episode starts now.
Hey, welcome everybody. Dr. Rich Douglas here for another episode of the Bellevue University Human Capital Lab. Today I have with me as our guest, Vicki Brown. She's an entrepreneur and a highly experienced human capital manager. So we'll be talking about some of the things that are in her head today. She's currently the CEO of Idomeneo Enterprises. And so if I got that wrong, and folks, we practiced before we started, and I probably still got it wrong. So I'm going to hand it over to Vicki to make sure that we get it right. And then we're going to see what's on Vicki's mind today. So Vicki, welcome.
Thank you so much, Rich. I'm thrilled to be here today. Thank you for inviting me. And you got closer than most human beings ever do. It's Idomeneo. And I was mentioning earlier that I picked the most difficult name to name my human resources company. But I really wanted something that didn't have human resources in the name. And secret pro tip, it actually comes from my background, my past. I'm an opera singer. And so that's the name of an opera, one of my favorite operas. And that is why it's impossible to spell and impossible to pronounce. It is a Greek pronoun. It's the name of a Greek king, a mythical Greek king. So, but when people tell me to change the name, I just look at them and say Adidas and keep going.
You know what? I'd rather have people mispronouncing the name of my company than not pronouncing it at all.
Exactly. Exactly.
So I think that's great. I'm not an opera singer. I'm a shower singer. And so that's because I'm only allowed to sing in the shower with the door closed. And that's at my wife's insistence. So we'll just, you know, like cut it off there, man. Not all I could deliver. So welcome. And we're going to talk today about human capital management issues. What's on your mind, Vicki?
Well, there are lots of things that are kind of in the ether these days. I know that a lot of what we specialize in is really helping first-time leaders, you know, select their first team, figure out how to lead them, how to grow, how to maintain a high-performing team, all of those things. My company, Idomeneo, actually is an outsourced HR company. So we're an HR department, but we have another division called Leader's Journey. And it's exactly what it says. It is help leaders on their journey toward building fantastic teams, keeping fantastic teams, growing them, et cetera. And particularly for folks who are, you know, you're really great at your job. If you're in a corporate setting, you're really great at your job. You get promoted to manager, then you get promoted to leader. And maybe you're really great at kind of building the widgets, but managing other people is a different muscle set. So we try to help those folks. And particularly my first love is entrepreneurs who are building their own organization. And all of a sudden, they realize they need help. They get people, but now they have to manage the people. And they have no idea what to do. So that's really where we specialize.
So many people step into the entrepreneurial world with their expertise, you know, that what they do really well, and they're really passionate and they really love. And we almost have to shake them and go, well, hang on, it's a business. There's exactly so much more to do for you to be able to deliver the thing that you love the most. So talking about leaders for a minute, you know, that you're really hitting home with me, because I firmly believe if you get that leadership, effective leadership always does better than ineffective leadership. And the culture eats planning for lunch. I mean, just, you know, there's no doubt about it. And to me, if you have solid leaders, people that are in place who are really capable of bringing an organization from where it is to where it's going, you know, the promise of that is fantastic. So what is it that you're doing with these subject matter experts, if you will, these people who have these amazing technical skills and who have been promoted on that basis? And well, now either they're high in an organization and they're faced with leadership challenges, or they're out on their own and facing with leadership challenges. What are the things that you focus on?
Well, particularly around the being out on your own and facing those leadership challenges, because, you know, I was very fortunate. I come from human resources. That's been my background. But when I started my company, what did I know from sales and marketing? What did I know from accounting? What did I know, you know? And so I understand their pain point. Because when someone says human resources to them, they're like, first of all, I hate it. And second of all, I have no idea what it is. And third of all, can somebody else do that for me? And the reality is that the relationship that you build with your team members, that's the crux of everything. That and your vision for the organization. And if you can filter everything through being respectful of the people that you hire, respecting their talent and their abilities, growing their talent and their abilities, and having a strong vision, you're 99% of the way there.
So, you know, you can outsource processes. In other words, you know, I can get somebody to do run my payroll or, you know, make appointments for me, but this isn't that. We also have this other element of learning how to engage people, how to motivate people, how to bring them forward. What do you actually do with these folks to help them be better prepared as leaders?
So we talk a lot, you know, everyone uses the buzzword mindset, but as an entrepreneur, it's all mindset. It really is. How, when, and under what circumstances to delegate and what that really means and how you can get the outcome that you're looking for without micromanaging someone. How you can correct perhaps a hiring mistake. Maybe you brought someone on and it's just not the right person for that role. And unfortunately, you know, very often people ask me, what's the one mistake that entrepreneurs or business leaders make that you think is critical to them, you know, being successful? And there are a couple of them, but one is being reluctant to have those difficult conversations. You are not doing anyone any favors. You're not doing the employee any favors. You're not doing the rest of your team any favors. And you're not doing the business any favors. I always say your role as a leader in the business is to make sure your number one role is to make sure the business is successful. So everybody eats. And so you can't just focus in on one person. I don't want to have a conversation with them because, you know, Vicky does everything great, except she can't get to work on time. Well, that's part of her responsibilities, you know, so you need to do something about that. You need to confront that. And also you're setting the tone for the rest of the team. And so when you start finding that there are gaps in the rest of the team and you're wondering, well, why? So-and-so was really great. You know, John was really great when he first started and now he doesn't seem quite as engaged because John sees how you behave with Vicky showing up late all the time. All right. of those things have trickle-down effects. So, you know, it's really getting people to think about how they're going to manage when the situation isn't going the way they want it to go, how they're going to have those conversations and still be a human being, because that's what typically people are afraid of. They're like, I'll come across as mean or because someone won't like me or, you know, all of that. And you have to understand that you're being respectful by letting them know where they're not meeting expectations versus just letting it go on and then having a nervous breakdown one day and going, you're fired. And they have no idea that it's coming. That is incredibly disrespectful.
And incredibly expensive. I mean, it's powerfully disruptive to have a hire eventually fail. And, you know, the different rules of thumb, the one I like to use is about 1.5 or 1.6 times that person's salary is what it costs you to replace that person. From the onboarding and the lack of productivity of a new person to all the input that you do and all the resources you employ and all the things that you do to bring that person on, prepare that person to perform, and the person doesn't necessarily perform and then leaves and you have to go through it all over again. 1.5, 1.6% or times someone's salary is probably an understatement. And then there are all the ripple effects. All like you were talking about just a moment ago about, well, Vicky's not showing up to work. Why am I busting my hump to show up? But there's also the ripple effect of, man, they didn't care about Vicky. They just dumped her. You know, so there are a lot of challenges. Now, when we're technical experts and we're the finance person and we've come up through the ranks of finance and we become the CFO or maybe some other vaulted position. Now, as you said, we have this different toolbox, this different skill set that we have to acquire and employ in order to be successful. But it was just so easy to fix the ledger, to fix the math. It was, you know, I can do that all in my sleep. But this person, if this person who I'm struggling with in their work, if I invite them in other words, I say, well, what's going on? And they're going to plop their whole life in my lap and I'm never going to survive. How do we help managers get over that feeling?
Well, what managers and particularly leaders, and I'm going to keep pointing back to entrepreneurial leaders because we're the ones, and I count myself in that group, we're the ones who think we have all the answers or that we should have all the answers. And what we have to understand is when you step into a leadership role, you should be committing yourself to continuous learning. Mm-hmm. Just because you have been promoted or started your own company or whatever the case may be, it doesn't mean that that's where your education stops. So you have to learn how to motivate people. You have to learn how to coach people. You have to learn how to problem solve and deal with conflict management. Those are things that you have to learn how to do. We all feel, you know, we feel like we can just, oh, I know, I've been in business for a long time. I've had managers and I know how they manage me and I'll just do the same thing. That's not necessarily the way you should go. And sometimes, many times, you end up just repeating mistakes that have been made in your career by your manager because maybe they were the kind of person who just, you know, yelled at you until you did what they wanted you to do. That is not the way to motivate people. That's not the way to build culture. That's not the way to build a team. And that's certainly not the way to interact with high performers because high performers will go be high performers somewhere else.
They sure will, won't they? You know, there's an old saw, and I don't know how true this is, that people don't leave jobs, they leave managers. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how much of that is true. But I know there's some truth in there, you know, having worked in this field and in learning and development, in my case, for the last 45 years, and leadership development. And so I've certainly seen that. Okay, I'm going to pin you down. I want to hear from you from a mechanical standpoint of what mm-hmm. you actually do. I'm a trainer primarily. Mm-hmm. So we all know what those people do. And they stand up in front of a room and they entertain for a while. And then they hand out certificates and hit the parking lot and get over really on Friday. That's what we do as trainers. But I'm also a coach. And coaching is a completely different situation. With coaching, we're no longer the guy, the sage on the stage. We're the guide on the side where we're helping mm-hmm. people come through. So when I look at developing people, I look at methods. And training is certainly a method. Learning, in other words, having somebody control their own development is also an aspect of that. So learning, training, and coaching are three methods. We have others like facilitation and mentoring and so forth. What do you actually do with your clients to help develop them so that they can be more effective?
So what we, on the leader's journey side, and also a little bit on the Idomeneo side as well, we talk about building a roadmap, a development roadmap for your team member. What that does is it gives you clarity around, you know, the direction that this job might possibly go and what are the steps after this particular role? What is the next step up? What is the next step up? And then what are you looking for? What kind of skill, experience, or education are you looking for people to gain to get from the step that they're in to the next step? I know that that feels like, oh, it's a lot of work. It feels like, you know, a cascade of job descriptions. I don't want to do that. But the reality is it throws into relief really what your business is about and where you want to go. And that's the work that very often people don't want to do because it's challenging. It's easier to say, I'll go along. I just want to get the next client. I just want to bring in more revenue. Mm-hmm. That is not having a vision and an objective for your organization. When you have that in place, then you can use that as the foundation for everything. So for instance, in my organization, we have HR business partners. Those are basically, in another environment, they would be called the, you know, the HR manager, the HR director. And so they deal directly with the clients. They are that client's HR person. So we have an HR business partner. Below that, we have an associate business partner, and they support the business partner. And then below that, we have coordinator. So the question is, what do you need to, even when you're hiring someone, what are you looking for in a coordinator? And then what additional skill set do you need to grow in order to be a junior associate business partner or a senior associate business partner. And then you go to business partner and then senior business partner and then director of the org, of the department. So what do those things look like? And I know very often when you start out or when you're very small, you say, well, I don't need all that because, you know, everybody does everything. We don't need all of those layers. But don't plan for today. Plan for the future. Plan for, because one day, Johnny's going to come to you and say, how do I get promoted? Mm-hmm. And if you don't have clarity around that, then you're going to end up making something up. It won't be consistent. And that will not help you going forward. If you really want to grow a team of high performers, you need to have answers for them when they say, what does my career path look like? What if I stay here, what's going to happen for me? How am I going to grow? And then you have to like really put some educate, you know, yes, it has to be training. It has to be experiences within your organization. Like you said, mentoring, shadowing other jobs. I love it when people, you know, take a day a month or a day every 6 months and they actually sit and do the job with another department, because that gives you a well-rounded experience of what's out there. Also, don't just limit it to your company. Maybe you have colleagues in other businesses that are completely unrelated to your industry, but maybe they could come in and talk about what their business is, what some of their challenges have been, how they've overcome them. Sales in one company is, you know, you're selling a different thing, but sales is sales. In accounting, accounting is accounting. So you can bring a lot of variety to your organization and really spur people on to achieve more if you think just outside your own particular box. Mm-hmm. Think about other options that you have available to you.
You know, one of the things that one of my clients is going through right now is they have a technical expertise, you know, mm-hmm. core expertise that the mm-hmm. company's good at. And everybody in it's good at it. I mean, they're the leader in their state, in their industry. They mm-hmm. are excellent. And they have zero bench strength for leaders. And one of the things that I emphasize is with my clients is, it's not just, as you said, it's not just about today. It's mm-hmm. also about tomorrow and the next day. Where are your future leaders going to come from? Also, exactly. If we prepare people to be really effective as leaders, prepared to step up, they're also going to be very good in the roles that they're currently holding. This builds succession planning and it builds a lot of fulfillment. People are, you know, you mentioned earlier before about being motivated. What motivates people? Well, it's the intrinsic factors. It's the things people feel good about. When they feel good about the organization, when they feel good about, you know, being able to bring their best to work every day, when they feel like what they do matters, you know, and how much say they have in the work. The more developed our leaders are, the more likely they're going to have that level of autonomy and be able to have that impact on the organization. So who do you work with? Who are your clients?
We work nationwide. So we started out actually working internationally. And I swore after my last 2 a.m. on Sunday call with the Philippines that we were out of that business. So that was many years ago.
That's a long while.
Absolutely. But so we work with all the clients in all states. And I think we currently have clients in, 32 states. We did a count the other day. And generally, it's going to be an employer. We have clients with as few as 2 employees and as many as 450. So it's a pretty wide band. But sweet spot is around 50 employees. When you get to 40, 50 employees, there's a whole new element of labor of employment law that gets layered.
You can't room and start running around together.
Absolutely.
Now you got to have structure and rules. And as you said, you know, then the legal issues start stepping in and you got to run it like a business. It can no longer be like a club, right?
That's right. That's exactly right. And they sneak up on you before you expect it. Because even you know, you'll think, oh, well, the count is 50. But how do they count the 50 is the question. So you might be a 50 earlier than you think. But so there are all sorts of things. And then when you start talking about, so, you know, we're both in California, So when you start talking about state laws, those sometimes at 20 people or 5 people, there's a big shift. So we really work with clients at around 40, 50, 60. That's a really, really sweet spot for us. But as I say, we work with clients across the board. Now, when they start getting to 200 people, 300 people, then we like to work with at least one person who's in-house. So if you have an in-house HR person and he or she is managing human resources, then they're spending a lot of time on employee relations, I can guarantee it. So they may not have time to know what's the latest guideline from the EEOC about, you know, DE&I or something. They may have no idea. And that's where we come in. We're the underpinning. We're the support that executes on the programs and initiatives that they're rolling out, keeps them on top of what's happening, updates policies, things like that, runs payroll, you know, handles benefits and employee questions around those things. But for clients who don't have an in-house person, we actually do the full gamut of HR. So we're the ones on the phone all day on employee relations issues. So
if I understand you correctly, you really are looking at this from two different perspectives. One of them is operating an HR function, whether you're doing it for them or whether you're helping their in-house people or person stay on their feet and be able to be successful. And then you also have this really driving desire to develop leaders. I'm going to pin you down on the leadership thing for a minute. Many organizations have their competency models. And if you can't go through Amazon Kindle without finding tons and tons of books with models about, you know, leadership this and leadership that. How do you decide what you're going to do to develop people to have that sense of leadership and that sense of being able to engage employees and to have a vision for the future? How do you decide what areas to develop?
So we really are looking at that at the kind of first move from a first mover perspective. So we're talking about people who have just, you know, gone into a managerial role, or they've been in it for a little while and realize it's not working, or first time entrepreneurs. Again, they're a subject matter expert. They've now rolled out of their corporate role and now they're, you know, starting their own shop. So we're kind of the early adopters. We're the ones who get in there and say, did you think about this here? I know you're having difficulty with these difficult conversations. Let's give you some tools and techniques and some training and some classes around how to do that. But my goal is not to be, see, I understand, I've been in HR long enough to understand that leadership development is its own animal. Sure, you can say, I'm HR and I do leadership development, I do all of that. However, when you really are dealing with someone who is at that level where they need that next level of support, of expert leadership development support, that's where we're calling in a you, basically. That's where we're handing them off to a specialist. We're the one, we wet their beaks. We're the ones who say, okay, you're low-hanging fruit. You don't know what to do. We're going to start you on this path. And then we're going to point you in a direction for continued success.
Vicky, you made the transition from being a corporate person, you know, part of growing your career and so forth. And then you moved into being an entrepreneur. Can you share with our audience a little bit about that experience and what you thought were the key issues associated with making that move?
Absolutely. I had no idea, no intention whatsoever of running my own company. It was the furthest thing from my mind. Okay. As you said, I was in corporate HR for a very long time. And my last corporate job was for a financial technology services firm. And that was around 2000, 2001. If you remember that time, there was a tech bubble that happened that kind of burst at that time.
Burst would be a good word.
Exactly. We got caught in the bubble. We were doing very well, but our investor's portfolio was not. So we ended up having to close the company. We closed in February of 2001. At that time, the president of the company came to me and said, okay, you grew us from 3 employees to over 300 employees in, you know, like 18 months. And you made HR look really fancy. And I gave you absolutely no money to do anything. It was amazing. You should think about opening your own company, starting your own company, because I think this is really a service you could offer to other businesses. And I said, I'm so flattered. That's so wonderful. Absolutely not. I'm going to go get a job. And he was like, okay.
Tell that to the tell that to the phone company or the water company.
Exactly.
Or
I was like, oh, yeah. What a fantastic idea. No. So from February, around April of 2001, he called back and said that he had a new gig. He was the CEO of this, you know, smallish company that had, he's in California, and they had most of their employees, actually all of their employees, were in New York. And he's like, I'm not moving to New York. I don't know anything about New York, but I've been working with you long enough to know that I need some HR something. And I don't know what it is, but I need something. And can you do it? And I can't afford you. Can you be an independent contractor and just like do this project and that project? And for those HR practitioners out there, I will tell you, yes, I made sure I met the the independent contractor guidelines. Mm-hmm. But I said, sure, that's fine. And so from April through to August of 2001, he kept adding things. What about this? What about that? What about the other? Because he knows me very well. So by August, I was like, listen, I need a corporate veil. We need a contract. I need insurance. You need to be secure in that I'm handling all of this personal information for your employees in a secure manner. You need to be able to sue me if I don't. I need to be able to sue you if you don't pay me. All of these things need to happen. And so I incorporated. And he said, it's about time, because that was his evil plan all along. So I was actually pushed into starting Edomineo. It was a complete surprise. It's the best thing I've ever done, and also the most nerve-wracking sometimes. But so he was my first client, and they were clients for, you know, almost 10 years. So my kind of takeaway from that story is he saw something in me I absolutely did not see in myself. So when you see something in people that you're working with or people that you're growing or developing, call it out. Push them. They have no idea. They're staring at tree bark. They are not seeing the forest. So you really need to call that out for them and develop them. And that, by the way, is being a good leader.
It really is. Now, you're employing the very skills that we're talking about and imbuing into others. Would you share a little bit about how you market your business? Because it sounds to me like there's a lot of relationship building going on.
There is. I was surprised by how much, I would say probably 85% of our business is referral based. And I was surprised by where the referrals were coming from. I was expecting, oh, we'll get referrals from, you know, business owners as we work with them. They'll refer us to their colleagues. But in fact, we get the majority of our referrals from business managers, from accountants, and surprisingly, from labor attorneys. And I never thought that would happen, because I thought, don't I kind of do what you kind of do? I mean, I'm not an attorney and we never pretend like we are.
Yeah.
But I write handbooks, you write handbooks. You know, wouldn't that be the same thing? It turns out that labor attorneys actually are much happier when they're not writing handbooks, actually, because it's, you know, it's a task that is very routine for them. And also, if and when they find themselves in a situation where they're defending their client, they're very happy to have worked. And I'm kind of patting myself on the back here, but they're happy about the fact that they've worked with an organization that they know there is documentation there. There is support there. There is something meat that they can hold on to when they're trying to defend that client, because the I's have been dotted and the T's have been crossed. Mm-hmm. So when a client finds themselves, when one of their clients find themselves in difficult circumstances, and there needs to be some, you know, some correction and then ongoing maintenance of that correction, like employee classifications or paying employees on time and things like that, they turn to us because they know that we are going to really support the client in making sure that that happens. So when the fix comes down, we're kind of the fix.
You know, the dotting I's and crossing T's point is really valuable. I'm a retired Air Force officer, and I'll tell you what, somebody breaks something, somebody does something, the very first thing you do is you go, okay, where's the training records? Let me see what this person was trained on and when.
Exactly.
And who was signed off on it and what version of it and so forth, because we're gonna go first to capabilities. And it's the same with HR. You're gonna go first, you're gonna go, was this person briefed? Did they sign off? Let's go look at the records. Let's find that out, because we want to make sure that we as an employer have done everything to prepare that employee for success. And then we'll deal with the fact that some people cross the line. You mentioned before 85% or so, you know, I know it's a ballpark, of your business comes from referrals. And then I brought up the fact that, you know, relationships. I want to underline something. Your very first client was somebody you knew. Somebody you knew from another life. So if you're interested, folks, in becoming an entrepreneur, I have two tips for you. And Vicky is just the epitome of both of these. Okay. One, when you're interested in doing it, if possible, do it as a side gig while you still have a job. Don't be like Vicky and get shoved and go, hey, what do I do now? How it goes.
I agree 100,000%.
It would be better if it didn't happen. Really glad that you survived it. And the other thing is relationships, relationships, relationships. Let people know what you're doing. Let people know what business you're in. It's okay to say it. If you truly believe that what you're doing has value and really helps people, tell them. Let them know this is what you're doing, you know? And I imagine that from that first relationship, where did the second client come from? Did it come from a referral from the first client, or was it another person that you met somewhere? How did that go?
Indirectly, it was a referral from the first client, although the first client didn't do the direct referral. It was someone I met in the process of servicing the first client. And that person said, you know, I have this other client that might really, you know, need your help. So exactly what you said, you have to understand. People say all the time, well, I don't have a network. I don't, you know, who am I supposed to sell to? I don't have a network. Yes, you do. You have a network. And in fact, if you do it right, if you're the entrepreneur, if you're the founder, if you're the business owner, you are probably more passionate and more plugged in to your organization than most people walking around. Mm-hmm. So that means when you get to the, you know, I will admit, I haven't learned how to sell. I get on a call, I do a discovery call, we have a conversation, and generally I end up doing some consulting on the call.
Sure.
But I'm trying to figure out what are their pain points? Where are they having trouble? Have they tried to fix it before? What did they employ to fix it? Why didn't it work? And then offering my suggestion or my guidance. And then if that works for them, if that feels right for them, then we can talk about the nuts and bolts of what eDomineo does and how we do it. Mm-hmm. But I, you know, I've tried many times to hire quote unquote, a salesperson. And I'm sure it's possible to do that. But generally speaking, I'm the best salesperson for my organization right now. Now, we will continue to grow and we definitely will have a sales department because I believe in delegation. But right now, I am the best salesperson for my organization because I know it intimately and I am the most enthusiastic about it. I have great team members around me and they are incredibly driven and incredibly on board with the vision, but I'm the one, you know? So you have to understand that you use the tools that you have. So I have kind of fashioned our sales process into something that works for my personality because I can't do a hard sell. I sound incredibly inauthentic. So, you know, that's being kind. So you learn to fashion things to highlight your talents and your skills and your abilities and still get you the outcome that you're looking for.
So I really want to make a couple of distinctions here for our audience because you're really laying it out for them, and I'm just going to drive it home. One is whether you're interested in becoming an entrepreneur or a solopreneur or a consultant or something of that nature, or whether you're operating within the structures of an organization. When you go and get outside help, or you are the outside help, you can approach this one of two basic ways. You can be a salesperson, and this is where you have a product or service and you find a client who needs it, and then you sell it. There's nothing wrong with sales. The vast majority of transactions out there are sales. If I want Frosted Flakes in the morning, I don't need a consultant.
Right.
I just need the Frosted Flakes, and I know where they're at the grocery store, so I'm going to go buy them, and I don't need to engage in my needs at that point. However, if instead, we turn it around and we say, let's go with the relationship first. Let's go with what are my clients' needs? What are they trying to accomplish? How can I partner with my client to reach their goals? And then we'll figure out the, as you said, the nuts and bolts. We'll figure out what needs to be done to get there. And that will be different for each client. Now you're consulting. Which is better? Neither. It depends upon what the situation calls for. It also depends upon your own approach. I've tried to pin you down several times and you wouldn't let me do it. This is a good thing. What this means is you're not product-centric first. It doesn't mean I'm sure that you can't go and reach out and grab the things that you need. But as Alan Weiss says in Million Dollar Consulting, we can find people to deliver. It's the relationship and the understanding of what the client needs, the trust that the client has in you and believes in you. Like your very first client knew you, trusted you, believed in you. In fact, said, "I can't afford you, but can you anyway?" It's really actually a great conversation to have when you're starting out because you're the big fish in a small pond. But my point is that when we focus on relationships, we can find the technologies, we can find the techniques. Sure, if you got a new whiz-bang product or system or service or whatever, and you want to go find people to buy it, do it. No objection to that. But what we're really talking about here is being good partners. And let's say, for example, we have somebody who is the head of HR inside of a well-threaded, running organization. That person should still be a consultant. That person should still be saying, yes, we do compliance and payroll and we do employee relations issues all day long, but what are the business needs? What are the needs of my organization? Having that sense of business savvy means that you are now not only just doing HR, for example, it could be anything, finance or anything, but you are actually doing business.
Exactly.
So we want to be able to prepare our clients. Well, then we also need to be that way ourselves. Fair enough?
Absolutely. And you said something that was super important and that I learned very early on in my career. Whether you're inside, as a matter of fact, even more so when you're inside an organization, if you're in human resources, and I'm sure a variety of other disciplines, but my experience is in HR, if you're in human resources, you will be 1,000 yards down the success path if you remember that you have internal clients. Mm-hmm. They are clients. Those department heads, those employees in those departments, those team members, they are all clients. So your number one thing is not just compliance and not just making sure everybody signed the handbook. Mm-hmm. It actually is, what does, and I'll get granular, what does this, my client, this new manager need to be successful? What works for him? What will grow him? What skills does he bring to the table? How can we expand on that? So you will always be more successful if you remember that your clients, you want to partner with them. And in fact, every company has them. There have been a couple of engagements that weren't as successful for us. And to the situation, it was because there was not a partnership there. Mm-hmm. The partnership is the thing, and that's what we look for. And so when I'm doing quote unquote sales or discovery calls, I'm also looking for an organization that we can partner with so that we can really help them succeed.
I don't know if you're familiar, this is a really obscure reference and they'll probably edit it out. But in the movie Ocean's 11, one of my favorite characters is Don Cheadle, and he plays Basher, the explosive expert with the Cockney accent. And when he's being arrested, and one of the buddies gets him sets him free. And as they're running away, he's thrilled to see Rusty, his friend, old friend, right? I hadn't seen him in a while. They're running away from the police after creating a diversion, and he says, "It'll be great working with proper villains again." And that's what we need to do. We need to look for proper villains.
I love it.
To work with people that we feel enjoined to. And and whether it's inside the organization when we're an internal consultant or whether it's outside the organization and we're an external consultant, the relationship is still there. So I really appreciate you bringing that out, Vicki. What I'd like to do is I'd like to I have one other question for you, but before I ask it, I'd like to turn the tables and see if there's anything that, you'd like to make sure that our audience hears from you that they haven't already heard.
I would just say, you know, the takeaway tips for me are always your vision, have that in line, and your mindset. You have to have a mindset of growth and continuing education and getting better and developing so that you have something to give to your team members. So you need to know which direction you're going, and you need to start developing the skill set to get there. That's kind of my takeaway.
All right. Well, I appreciate that. Now, my last question for you is, how can people find you? How can they find your company?
Well, I'm not going to force everyone to spell Idomeneo. You can find me at VickiBrownHR.com. So that's Vicky with a Y.
Pronounce Idomeneo.
Right. Exactly.
Spell VickiBrownHR.com.
That's Vicky with a Y, VickyBrown, like the color, HR.com. And we have a little gift for your listeners. So if they put in VickyBrownHR.com/podcast gift, you'll get a little gift from us around human resources, you know, just some tips and tricks around HR. And also it has all of the information about where we are, our handles, our social media, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, Vicky Brown HR, let me tell you something. You're an inspiration. And I just really want to express my gratitude for you coming on the podcast today. Hopefully people will draw away some good lessons from it. And maybe the next relationship that your organization will have is sitting out there right now watching. So let's hope for the best. I'd like to thank everybody for watching today. Thanks for coming out to another episode of the Human Capital Lab podcast. I've been Rich Douglas. You've been Vicky Brown, and they've been real. So just awesome stuff. So Vicky, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us on the Human Capital Lab podcast, a Growth Network podcast production in collaboration with Bellevue University. For more info, visit humancapitallab.org. If you were inspired today, pass the link on to a colleague or friend. Stay tuned for our next episode, and until then, keep learning to unlock the long-term potential of human capital.